Hello there, my name is Chris Kirk and welcome to TW Backstage, the podcast all about the business of comedy and culture and theatre and fringe. This is the second of three editions of this all-new podcast that we recorded last month up there at the Old Edinburgh Festival. Although, while this edition is based on conversations that we had in Edinburgh during August, what we're interested in is what happens this month, September, because this edition is called You've Done Edinburgh, What Next? So let's get going, shall we? 2 weeks, of course, have now passed since the end of the 2022 Edinburgh Festival and the latest edition of the magnificent Edinburgh Festival Fringe. As you almost certainly already know, anyone can perform as part of the Edinburgh Fringe, providing they can find a place in Edinburgh in August where they can legally stage a show. And that's what makes the Edinburgh Fringe Festival so big and so vibrant and so exciting. But of course, it's no secret that staging a show at the Edinburgh Fringe can be very expensive and very risky. And it's often the performers themselves who are taking that financial risk. So why do they do it? Well, as we noted on the last edition of TW Backstage, there are various reasons why performers and producers and promoters and theatre companies choose to do the Fringe. For some people, it's basically a holiday where they get to do what they love doing every day for 3 weeks. What do they love doing? They love performing or being involved in staging a show, hanging out with a community of creative people and seeing lots of other performers doing their shows. For the people who take that approach to the Fringe, the cost of taking part is in many ways the cost of the experience, the cost of the holiday. For some people, the Fringe is actually a place to make some money. Depending on the kind of show that you present and the way you present it, it is possible to walk away from the Edinburgh Fringe with a bit of a profit. Not a huge profit, but a bit of a profit. Now, for all the reasons that we discussed on the last edition of TW Backstage, it is arguably getting harder to make a profit at the Fringe. Accommodation costs are surging, and that in particular is making it harder to go into profit. But that's not to say that it's impossible. But for many people, the Fringe is basically an investment. An investment they are making in their creative careers and in their own creative businesses. The Fringe is a place to learn your craft, develop your shows, and get better as a creator and a performer. It's a place to build a profile and to make connections with key decision makers from across the cultural industries. Basically, for these people, the aim of the Fringe is to grow their creative business and to progress their creative career. It's that latter group of Fringe people that we're mainly interested in this time. If you are doing the Fringe this year to grow your creative business and progress your creative career, what should you be doing next? Having had a couple of weeks to recover and rest and readjust after the frenzy of Edinburgh's festival month, what should you be doing now to capitalise on any momentum that you managed to build during August? As the Fringe community was leaving Edinburgh at the end of last month, we surveyed a number of producers and promoters and performers and other Fringe people to get their thoughts on that very question. And based on their input, we identified a number of tasks that anyone seeking to build on the momentum of their Fringe production should be getting on with this month. A lot of this is common sense, of course, but we thought it would still be useful to organise all of those many tasks into a simple 5-point plan, which we'll now go through on this edition of TW Backstage. And if you're interested, those 5 points are as follows. Number one, reflect. Number two, document. Number three, reach out. Number four, network. And number five, plan ahead. I should also mention that I also spoke to some of the guests who appeared on the last edition of TW Backstage about this very topic, about what Fringe people should be doing in September to build on all of that momentum. So, as well as me running through the 5-point plan, on this edition, we'll also hear some more from Charles Pamant, the artistic director at the Space Venues at the Edinburgh Fringe, from Innes Worth, the producer with Innes Worth Presents, and from Richard Stamp, who is co-founder of the Fringe Guru website, and during Edinburgh, a reviewer for the We Review. So here we go with the 5-point plan, starting with number one, reflect. How did Fringe 2022 go for you? Was the show itself everything that you hoped it would be? Maybe it was, but maybe it wasn't. And it's fine either way. We all know that staging a show at Edinburgh is a major task, and the final phase in particular, in late July and early August, is always frantic. It's inevitable that sometimes the show you performed wasn't quite the show that you originally envisaged. Maybe you were able to evolve it and make it perfect during August itself, but maybe you weren't. A good starting point when it comes to reflecting on how things went is to take a look at any reviews that you got, whether those are reviews published by the festival media or audience reviews that were posted to the edfringe.com website. If the reviews are wholly positive, then great. Take those reviews, hold on to them, and wait for point two in my 5-point plan. But if there were some criticisms about the show in those reviews, well, maybe it is worth giving those criticisms a little bit of thought. Of course, we know a review is just one person's opinion. And while most of the festival media do try to ensure that the right kind of reviewer sees each show, it's not an exact science. Just because you're a comedy fan and a comedy reviewer doesn't necessarily mean that you're into every single kind of comedy, and the same is true for theatre and dance and music and so on. So sometimes when a show gets a negative review, maybe it's just confirmation that the show wasn't right for the specific reviewer who saw it, but for the right kind of audience, it's still a great show. But all that said, it is worth thinking about any criticisms in the reviews, because sometimes they might be valid, and they're possibly worth thinking about, particularly if you're planning on taking the show you did in Edinburgh this August elsewhere, but even to inform future projects that you might be working on. A good example here is where a reviewer hasn't quite got something or understood a point you were trying to make in your show. Is that because the reviewer just missed something really obvious? Or is it because you could actually do a better job at communicating whatever it was that you were trying to communicate? Maybe that negative review that was kind of annoying initially could actually be valuable in helping you to evolve your show and make it better. Now, this is something I actually talked about with Richard from Fringe Guru when I asked him what he thought Fringe performers should be doing with any reviews they got this August.
Well, it very much depends on what their next step is going to be. So I'm a champion of reviewers offering constructive feedback. So if the next step is going to be to go on to produce another work, then look at the review, see what you can take from it, positives and negatives, and try to use that to build your own creative practice.
Just come in on that. I think that's an interesting point, isn't it? I mean, there is one thing which we always say, and I know you say, which is a review is just one person's opinion. And sometimes maybe the reviewer just wasn't right for your show, and that's just an unfortunate thing that sometimes happens. So it doesn't necessarily mean the reviewer is right, but the flip side is doesn't necessarily mean they're wrong. And maybe looking at the review and thinking about it, and it's like, okay, even if you don't agree with every criticism they've made, maybe actually there's something in there that's a good point. Quite a lot of reviewers, at the very least, see a lot of shows here, even if they don't review the rest of the year. So yeah, I guess it's once we're out of August and you're out of the stress of the fringe, going back to those reviews and saying, did they have a point? Is there something that we could evolve or address moving forward?
Yeah, and you can tell, can't you? I mean, you can read a review and you can tell whether the reviewer actually knows what they're talking about, and they don't always, and sometimes it is just a personal reaction, and yeah, it's right to disregard those and to carry on doing what you want to do. But on the other hand, there are some really valuable comments in reviews which can really give an insight into the way that your work is being perceived. I mean, I remember once I reviewed a show in Brighton and gave it 2 stars, and then the show came to Edinburgh and I got chased out in the street by one of the creatives. And obviously I was bracing myself for an uncomfortable conversation, but she hugged me and said, thank you so much, because I'd said something, I hadn't understood something about the show, which they had taken for granted that everybody would understand. And nobody had ever been there before to communicate that to them. And she felt it and made it a much better and more approachable show.
In addition to reflecting on what happened on stage, it's obviously also worth reflecting on everything else that went into your Edinburgh 2022 project. The production, budgeting, marketing, and so on. What worked, what didn't work, and what would you do differently next time? With fringe projects, I always find that most of the things that didn't go as well as planned were usually due to a simple lack of time. If only we'd started that thing a little bit earlier, it all would have been fine. I think it's probably inevitable that most people working at the fringe will never have quite as much time as they'd ideally like. But it's still worth noting the things that could have gone better or caused less stress had you been able to start earlier, and maybe next time you will. Okay, so that's point one. Now let's talk about point number two, document. You really should document the show and your wider Fringe experience, most probably by setting up a specific page on your personal website or your company website, or wherever it is that you put your professional stuff online. This is particularly important if you're planning on performing your 2022 Fringe show elsewhere in the future, but personally, I would say you should document your Fringe experience either way to show to the wider world and anyone who's checking you out the kind of things that you do as a performer or a producer or a company. So we were probably talking about a specific page on your website where you post any reviews that you got at this year's festival, plus any photos and marketing materials, and any other useful information about the show, the production, and what you did in Edinburgh in August. And of course, if you are planning on performing the show again, make sure there's contact information about how people can get in touch, because maybe they want to partner with you on a performance. In terms of the reviews, obviously, if you got a glowing 5-star critique, then make sure you lead with that and make sure that the rating really stands out. But remember, other reviews can be valuable too, including the dreaded 3-star review. It's true, during August, where the star ratings themselves are often what you lead with on your marketing, that 3 out of 5 is a bit disappointing. But always remember, a 3-star review is not a bad review. And there's almost certainly something in there that you could and should be using and be posting as you document your Fringe show, your Fringe experience, on your website. Of course, we all know that there is no guarantee that a show, a performer, a production will get a media review at the Fringe, because there are so many shows on and a limited number of reviewers with a limited amount of time. But if you do have reviews from known publications, whether that's year-round newspapers, magazines, websites, or seasonal media which have a decent profile at the festival, well, I have to say, I think that those reviews are always going to have a little bit more kudos, a little bit more value than audience reviews on the Fringe website. Although we should remember that in addition to the more traditional and established media and festival media, there are also now quite a few bloggers, particularly in the theatre space, who have built up a decent reputation, whether that's at the festival or elsewhere or both. And their reviews too will probably have quite a lot of value to you when you're selling and pitching your show in the future. The value of your Edinburgh reviews, particularly when pitching shows to other theatres and venues and producers, was another thing I spoke to Richard from Fringe Guru about, and here's what he had to say about all that.
I've spoken to venues in London, to artistic directors, who have made really clear that reviews from known publications do have a real cachet when you're putting forward that kind of work. We may one day get to the point that audience reviews are a substitute for that, but we're not there yet. So there is the value of a professional review in selling your work can't be underestimated.
And I guess the word professional is interesting there, isn't it? Because sometimes some people will be snooty and say, well, a professional reviewer is someone who is a full-time employed reviewer. Those reviews don't actually exist anymore. But I guess it's somebody who's reviewing for a publication that has some sort of editorial process, has some sort of presence, and so therefore isn't just, in essence, audience members who are putting... No, obviously, some audiences write really good reviews, but it is somebody who, through the platform they are writing for, you can assume there's some sort of process behind who they are, what they think, and how the reviews are put together.
I think that whole snootiness about people who don't write for national newspapers, yeah, I think that's 5 or 10 years in the past. I genuinely do believe we've moved beyond that. I think the middle group now, and the really interesting middle group, are the bloggers. And there are some theatre bloggers who are much more insightful than I am. They've got, they've got more depth, they've got more understanding, and I very much respect them. And again, I think that those individuals, they develop a name. People get to understand who they are. And if you've got a quote from one of those and you can include that in your material that you send to venues, then I think that will work well for you as well.
Having reviewed for the first time in quite a few years at the festival, this is me talking now, and I'm in the process of writing up my reviews, having seen 12 shows in 3 days, which I know from a Fringe perspective is not very a lot, but it seems like quite a lot to me. I find writing reviews quite easy. I agonize over star ratings, and I know star ratings is something that gets discussed every year at the Edinburgh Festival. Why do we have star ratings? They're useless. Oh, everyone wants them for their posters. But I guess there is that thing, isn't there, that I mean, the key thing I always want to say is you can still use a 3-star review. A 3-star review can still be saying there was some really good stuff about this show. You should be supporting this show.
So I once wrote a 3-star review which contained the sentence, "Everyone around me was laughing so hard I feared for their health, but I found myself just mildly amused." So, of course, what did they do? They took the bit of that which said everyone around me was laughing so hard I fear for their health, and they put that on their posters. And I couldn't possibly object, because it wasn't just what I'd written, it was what I meant. It's just that it wasn't everything that I'd said in that review. So, yeah, as time has gone on, I've mellowed about this. You know, I've stopped being offended when people quote me out of context. I've got a lot better at making sure there aren't things in the reviews which can be quoted completely out of context. And I think, take what you can, you've worked hard for it.
While I agree with Richard that reviews from trusted media and bloggers have more value than audience reviews, that's not to say that you can't make use of any positive audience feedback that you got during August, probably on the edfringe.com website. Personally, I definitely consider including a What the Audience Had to Say section on your webpage with a decent selection of the best audience responses. Also, if other fringe people who weren't actively involved in your show, I'm including in that other performers, were super positive about your performance during August and providing you're confident that they weren't just being polite, well, it might be worth asking those people if they give you a few sentences summarizing their positive feedback that you could publish on your website. Indeed, you might find, amongst the audience reviews on edfringe.com, that some other performers have given you some positive critiques. And if they have, I would put those in with the media reviews rather than audience feedback, because the people you're going to be approaching about future opportunities may well know those performers or be fans of those performers, and therefore their positive critiques could definitely prove valuable. Which brings us neatly to point number 3 on our 5-point plan, reaching out. If you're looking to stage your show elsewhere, then obviously you now need to identify possible opportunities and get in touch with the right people. And that obviously is going to require a little bit of research. Are there venues or producers or promoters or other festivals who might simply book you to perform your show? Or will you have to continue to self-produce? If so, are there any venues or festivals where you could do that but in an affordable way, and where you could be pretty confident about finding a decent audience? When I was chatting to the producer Innes Worth in the middle of the festival, I asked her about the 4 productions that she was working on at this year's festival, 4 great solo shows, and whether they were now looking for future opportunities to present those shows elsewhere beyond the festival.
Yes, actually, I'm producing 4 shows, and all my 4 shows are very interested to go beyond, and I've been talking to all of them. So we're looking at different touring opportunities, and obviously, once the reviews are out, and once all the good reviews are out, because that's your starting point, you know, when you get really good reviews from the big, you know, national and or local papers, that's kind of the starting point of trying to get more theaters to book the shows for further.
And let's say you had somebody at the festival who's it's their first time producing at the festival. They've done a show, the show's gone well, maybe they've got a couple of good reviews, and their ambition, like you and your clients, is to go and do these shows elsewhere. What can you be doing to keep that momentum going and open up those other opportunities?
Just put a good press pack together with all the reviews and everything that they have gathered here in Edinburgh. And there is a book out called Contacts, which I'm sure a lot of people know about. And it has a list of all the venues across the UK for sure. And even Ireland, there's a book like that in Ireland. I'm sure that, you know, other countries carry the same kind of, you know, contact book. And it gives all the important information about all the different touring companies and those theaters, and they can, you know, sell their shows that way.
While we're talking about other opportunities to perform your 2022 show, it's also worth noting that there are a number of other fringe festivals, a little bit like the Edinburgh Fringe, happening elsewhere in the UK and beyond, which, although like the Edinburgh Festival, are a little bit smaller and possibly a little bit easier to manage. It's interesting with those other fringe festivals that some people use them as a build-up to Edinburgh, to test out a show that they then take to the Edinburgh Festival in August. Whereas other people use those other fringes to take shows that they've already done at the Edinburgh Fringe and had some success with at the Edinburgh Fringe in order to get them to a bigger audience. And some people do a combination of the two. Now, Richard from Fringe Guru also reviews shows at other fringes around the UK. So I was keen to get some insight from him on which of those other fringe festivals are definitely worth checking out.
So certainly Brighton. Brighton is... pretty confident the second largest Fringe in the UK. It suffered a bit of a setback this year when one of its major venues wasn't operating, but it will come back. That's got a large local audience. It's close to London. It's within day trip distance from London. So I think that is an opportunity to get good audiences into your show. In terms of Fringes that I personally like, I love Buxton. Buxton is a very different proposition. Obviously, that's quite a small town. It's not somewhere that you're going to pack out a large venue, but it is somewhere that you're going to have an enjoyable time meeting with other performers and with the audience and talking about your show and seeing other great works. And then, of course, there's the Vault Festival in London. Now, that's different. So that's not open access. That's invitation. But I think that the Vault is turning into one of the premier fringes for a particular type of work. So for theatre that's a little more unusual, more experimental, perhaps, I think the Vault is a natural home for that.
Yeah, it's interesting, Vault Fest, isn't it? Because depending on how we're defining Fringe, some people would say Fringe Festival is an open access festival where no one can perform. Obviously, in the context of London, Fringe means something different. And I guess the Vault Festival is on the latter definition of Fringe. Having said that, has a very strong connection to the other Fringe festivals, again, in terms of people showcasing and developing new works there, which are then going to pop up at Edinburgh, or doing the Lap of Honour thing and taking the Edinburgh show to get a decent London audience.
And, you know, I think a Fringe will develop to the Vault. I think the Vault is now big enough that it will just, you know, venues around it, which do exist, will start to ride on its coattails. And it could become like the nucleus of something much bigger.
So there are lots of places where you could take your Edinburgh show next. And there are lots of resources out there, including online, to help you identify opportunities and work out how best to pursue those opportunities. We'll also be focusing on the whole pitching your shows thing a little bit more on future editions of TW Backstage. However, one thing I would say at this point is that it's definitely worth thinking if there's anyone you met during August in Edinburgh who could actually offer you some specific timely advice on what opportunities might be out there for you right now. Which neatly brings us to point number 4 of our 5-point plan, which is network. We all know that succeeding in the creative industries involves an awful lot of networking, which is to say, getting to know the right people in the right places at the right time in order to unlock possible opportunities. We also know that most people working in the creative industries hate networking, or at least they hate formal networking. Of course, every time you were chatting or socializing with other performers and producers and fringe people during August, in a way, that was networking too. Even though that might make something that was wonderful sound depressingly cynical. But it's true. And here's the key thing. Successful networking is all about following up with the people that you meet. So if there was anyone you met during August, whether because you were formally networking or you just met them informally during the Fringe, it is definitely worth sending them a follow-up email simply saying that it was nice to chat, that it would be great to stay in touch, and maybe sending them a link to that page on your website where you've documented your 2022 Fringe experience. And remember, when it comes to building your professional network, we're not just talking about established producers and promoters who you may have met during August. I mean, it's possible you didn't actually meet any of those established producers or promoters. But it's worth dropping a quick thank you email to all the people at your venue, all the other performers that you met, the technical staff, anybody you chatted to who is involved in the business of Fringe, because all of those people are involved in the arts in some way, and they may be able to help you get future opportunities down the line. And as I said, some of the people that you met during August can probably offer you some really useful advice for what you should be doing next. This doesn't apply to everybody, obviously, but there might be some producers, promoters, or maybe some of the venue people, or indeed other performers who you met in August, who could now help you decide where the future opportunities lie for you and your show. And you'll probably find that actually quite a lot of those people, although they're super busy, will be happy to offer a little bit of advice along the way. One thing I always say to people across the creative industries is if you email a producer or a promoter or a venue and you say to them, will you book me or produce me or promote me? Then the answer is almost certainly no, or at least not at the moment. However, if you email somebody and say, could you give me 15 minutes on Zoom to help me identify future opportunities? Well, while as I say, everyone is super busy, maybe they won't be able to spare that time, But actually, quite a lot of people will probably say yes to something like that. When I was chatting to Charles from the space during August, one of the things that we talked about was how everyone you interact with during the Fringe can potentially become part of your professional network and may well be future collaborators.
The great thing about coming to a venue that's quite diverse and has lots of genres is that opportunity to meet people you can collaborate with. And it's always a joy to see people come back with people they've met here as co-producers and co-directors and bringing new work and writing shows and giving each other that creative passion and adding to it.
And it's everybody you've met while you are here. It's not just the Channel 4 or Netflix or Spotify people who might be here, or the BBC people who might be here, or the big producers who might be here. Every single person you've met is potentially a future collaborator. Every person you've met, you know, the technicians you've met will hang out in theatres the rest of the year talking to decision makers.
Exactly that. And that's the reality. You know, we have a lovely courtyard bar here at Surgeons, and that chatter after shows is driven by that. And look, reviews are part of it. The experience is huge. That's the mainstay. And that sort of meeting and collaboration and conversation and many, many, many collaborations of future Edinburgh shows and shows beyond Edinburgh have been kind of evolved and created in these environments. And that's how it is. And that's what the Fringe will always be, Chris. Yeah.
And I suppose it's that terrible networking word, but unfortunately that is the business. And I guess the key thing about networking is always following up. So it's great to meet everybody while you're here and have a great time, but then follow up with those people post-festival, remind them what you did, remind them that you enjoyed their show. And as I say, yeah, just because they don't necessarily have a job title that suggests they can book you next week, they are potentially going to help you grow your business and your career.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, last year, I know it was the sort of Slimline Festival, but we had a guy who was doing tech for Semitone, one of the a cappella groups in Exeter, and he potted around and he said, oh, by the way, I do a bit of stand-up. I said, right, well, look, do some stand-up here. Ad hoc, do it. And he did late night, and everything was selling out last year. Everything sold out where we were. So he was just sort of 80 people turned up. And, you know, you have someone like, people know the name Kate Copstick in Edinburgh. She thought she'd pop in and she went and thought he was fabulous. And his journey now is he's back, he's doing his late night show. But the collaboration and the people he met doing that, from Kate to various others. And I think, Chris, you even turned, you thought, I'll go and see him this year. And that's a great example of someone who's just finding out and evolving. And it's just a process. And it is like that. And, you know, it is. But those things are all really healthy and useful. I've got a girl from Canada who's been coming for some years. She's built this whole collection of she's a cabaret performer, really. But she's now got a collective of people, and they do shows together in different capitals in the world. People go to Canada and she'll be at the doing a festival, and they'll join that and they'll collaborate, and she'll come to London and Paris and do shows. And it's that meeting of minds, that collaboration is nowhere else, I don't think.
Thanks to Charles there. And finally, point number 5, plan ahead. What are we planning ahead to? Well, of course, Edinburgh Fringe 2023. For many performers and people involved in comedy and theatre and culture, Edinburgh provides a fixed point in the year around which they grow their creative businesses and progress their creative careers. The aim being to step everything up a level every August in terms of maybe putting on a bigger show or reaching a bigger audience or whatever your objectives for the future might be. And while there was a time, somewhere in the past, where pretty much everyone in the Edinburgh Fringe community could take a couple of months off in September and October before starting to plan the following August, unfortunately, that's not really how it works anymore. If you are planning on returning to the next Fringe in 2023, it is actually worth making some initial plans straight away. Maybe setting a timeline, thinking about what budget you might need next year, thinking about what venues you might want to approach, and also thinking about possible collaborators next year, maybe business partners who you could work with, maybe a producer or a promoter or a publicist or somebody else who might be up for a little bit of collaboration. Especially if this year you are doing everything truly DIY on your own. As a starting point, it's worth investigating what role different producers and promoters and publicists and agencies might play in your future career. Maybe they're right for you, maybe they're not. Maybe they'll be right for you in 2025, 2026, but not 2023. But it's certainly worth working out. What is it that everybody does within the wider Fringe community, and how might you partner with them in the future? I asked Innes about the role that she plays as a producer at the Fringe, and also I was interested to know, is she already making plans for Fringe
2023?
Yes, I am, actually. I've been approached, Chris, by a few people already to talk about the future and talk about the shows for next year. So it's crazy. You know, that window has also gotten so much narrower than in the past, because in the past, I would literally just focus on the Fringe and then, like, you know, would have a really nice September when I could relax, maybe go to the beach, maybe take a little vacation, and then slowly kind of get into it, you know, to plan for next year. But since things have gotten so speeded up, yes, it's already starting for the next 2023 Fringe.
And in terms of selecting shows that you want to work with, I mean, I think maybe for people who, maybe there are performers who've come, because obviously you mentioned solo shows, and this is a brilliant festival for solo shows. I mean, there's so many great solo shows here. But often a lot of performers doing solo shows, first time here, they're probably self-producing. They are literally a one-person outfit. And I guess they might then look to work with someone like yourself in future festivals. So I guess there's two parts to this question, which is, if somebody, you know, starts collaborating with someone like yourself, what is your role as the producer? You know, what is it that you're doing? What is the performer doing? And then I guess, you know, what makes a performer somebody you want to invest your energy and time into working with?
Well, usually the process is complicated and it varies, and it's kind of versatile on each person. You know, each person is different. You know, the budget always has to be in place, or the idea of a budget, you know, how we're going to go around getting a budget for the shows. And it's different for every performer and even me. You know, sometimes I've, you know, produced the shows and invested into them. Sometimes the shows kind of focus on bringing the money into the mix. You know, sometimes we raise the money together and have like crowdfunding, and, you know, or have friends and family really support the show. So they're all any which way is possible to get these budgets, you know.
And I guess if you've got a performer who maybe they have managed to find the funding, whether that's through crowdfunding or through, you know, an arts organization or whatever, I guess when you're not actually putting money in as the show, maybe just talk us through all of the many, many other things that you're doing for those shows as the producer.
I mean, in the beginning, it's always about pitching the shows to the venues. You know, the initial thing has to be that I feel passionate about these shows and that I have to like them, you know, because if I don't like them, it's kind of pointless. So that's the initial thing. And, you know, by me liking them, I usually either see their shows in person, or they send me the video and or script and or maybe any press that's been done or pictures or, you know, anything, any materials that they have, they send them to me. And then I pitch to the venues that I usually work with. And that's a whole process by itself that usually lasts at least, you know, 2 months, 2-3 months. And then it's, you know, getting all the 40-word blurbs and the 100-word blurbs and all the advertising for it, and creating the poster and creating the leaflets and creating, that's another thing that's, you know, this year is so much more formats that this advertising needs to be, you know, created. So my graphic designer has been way busier than in the past. And then, you know, getting my whole team together, you know, my assistants, my flyering team, my press team, my marketing team, my advertising team, you know, like the whole thing together. And then getting all that in motion. And then, you know, when we get here on the ground in Edinburgh, it's basically seeing all the needs, because every show has different needs, so focusing on their needs and they're really daily needs, sometimes hourly needs, you know, so it's busy.
Yeah, so beyond investment, there is your expertise, you know what is required here at the festival, there is the resource that you're bringing both before and especially once we're here on the ground. And then, I mean, you briefly mentioned the pitching to the venues, but I guess also it's remembering just how important relationships are, particularly at that stage. And I guess that's because you've been doing shows here so long now, you have those personal relationships. So you're immediately talking to the right people. They trust you as a curator. So you have a massive head start than if a performer was just cold emailing Assembly or Pleasance or someone like that.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, they know me, they know my work, they know what goes into it and how I've been doing it all these years. And yeah, the trust is a really, really big thing, and reputation. I mean, you know, I'm certainly not doing this for a huge amount of money, you know, but my passion and my reputation are really my number one things that I focus on.
So there you go, a 5-point plan for making the most of your Edinburgh experience once the Fringe is over. Reflect, document, reach out, network, and plan ahead. There's a summary of everything I've just said in the notes that accompany this podcast on the thisweekculture.com website, so do check those out if you're interested.
We have one more edition of TW Backstage that was recorded at this year's Edinburgh Fringe, although that one is a little bit different, because next time we are going to be having a look at the Comedians Charter that the Union Equity launched right at the start of this year's Fringe. And we'll also be asking the question, is now the time that the comedy community needs to organise in a way that maybe it hasn't in the past? That's the next edition of TW Backstage. Also coming up later this month, we have a number of editions which are basically going to consist of panel discussions that we staged at the Cambridge Sound and Vision Festival earlier this year, all about the business of comedy, comedy careers, making comedy online, and the future of live streaming. So do look out for those as well. And indeed, if you're interested in all this stuff and you'd like to get these podcasts as soon as they're available, well, make sure you subscribe to TW Backstage in your podcast app of choice. You should also sign up to our TW Weekly Bulletin that comes out every Monday morning. It's full of free-to-see show recommendations for London and online and beyond. Plus, my colleague Caro interviews some of her favourite performers and producers and writers each week. And in there, you'll also find updates on the latest editions of this here podcast. TW Backstage is a podcast from This Week Culture and 3 Weeks Edinburgh. It's presented by me, Chris Cook, and for more great cultural stuff, do check us out at thisweekculture.com.